Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Again, we await our guest to join us just shortly. And again, guest be Natalie Jacobson. Every Life, a Story. This is a Peter E. Randall publisher. And my understanding from reading the book was that this was something that was done during the pandemic. This Natalie wouldn't be the first guest that I've had on who penned or put a book together during the pandemic, but that's how this came to be. I guess my first question, once we do have her on the line, is, you know, was this something that was in the works? You know, again, this is someone who with a Serbian background, grew up in Chicago, and part of the conversation that we'll talk about talking about this book. I mean, how many out there remember, you know, watching Channel 5 in the early to the mid 70s, the 80s, and seeing Natalie and Chet Curtis? It's interesting because I want to say it was like 17, 18 years ago. I remember actually bumping into Chet Curtis, Chet being someone who he would be, I would see him at the Alba in Quincy, kind of a piano bar. A very personable guy, somebody who liked to sing and chat. Definitely something interesting. But knowing how, you know, they were part of the news. Just think about it. How in the 70s, how things have changed over the years, how things have evolved. You're talking about a time when WCVB came along prior to the 24-hour news cycle, the Ted Turners, when we get, you know, CNN and news around the clock. Well, this is, you know, Beth, there was a time when we didn't depend on Twitter or the latest, you know, blogger to put something out there. We depended on local news, whether it was here, 95.9 WATD in the late 70s, early 80s, 90s, to, you know, local newspapers, to our Boston TV stations for what was happening in the area. That's what I remember growing up. And joining us to talk about her new book, Every Life a Story, Natalie Jacobson reporting, is the author herself, Natalie Jacobson. Natalie, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I had trouble getting through to you, so I'm a little delayed in catching up. I'm sure it's my stupidity, but for some reason I couldn't connect.
Well, I will say, just right out of the gate, I had an opportunity to preview a copy of the book, but I was also, I'm a big fan of audiobooks, and a lot of times they're narrated to somebody who will narrate a book for an author. I found it amazing and refreshing to hear Natalie Jacobson basically narrating her own book and hearing and feeling the emotion of certain topics and certain subjects and you know, raw emotion depending on what the subject was. So I want to say, first and foremost, I was able to enjoy a book in two forms.
Oh, well, that's so nice. Thank you. That makes me feel great. I really appreciate that. I did record it, and it is, both the hardcover and the audio are available on Amazon and the ebook. So thank you very much. You make me feel good.
So, you know, let's talk about deciding to write the book. I believe that you indicated in the book that the pandemic was something that kind of spurred you to write this. Was there a plan to document your career and your life and some of the things that you experienced before that or after?
It's a good question. And, you know, sometimes life just presents you with an opportunity, and you got to grab it. My brother, to start the list, and many people that I didn't even know would stop and say, have you written a book? And I'd say, well, no. But if you did read a book that I wrote, what would you hope to read about? And people would say things such as, stories, just tell us stories. Well, it was hard to focus on that. And then when, in March of 2020, when COVID hit and everything shut down, you couldn't even go and play tennis or golf or anything, you just were locked up wherever you happened to be, it occurred to me that this is the moment. Excuse me. My allergies are kicking in here. If you're ever going to write this, this would be the time. So I sat down at a computer, and I have no idea how this happened, but the memories just flowed. And for the next 6 or 7 weeks, every day, I just wrote off the top of my head for about 5 hours a day, and that's how it happened.
How easy was it? Was it therapeutic to talk about your growing up in Chicago as this Serbian kid? A family, you know, your parents were first generation Americans. Was it therapeutic for you?
Was what therapeutic? I'm sorry.
Would you say writing about, you know, growing up in Chicago and your past, little known things that we don't know about Natalie Jacobson?
Well, sure. You know, nobody runs around telling them their biography, but I don't know that it was therapeutic. No, I wouldn't look at it that way. I didn't want to write a memoir that was all about me. I mean, who cares? But I do believe that you need to know who your author is. If you want to read a book, who's writing it? I feel that way about when you Google things and who just said that, or Wikipedia or any of the online media sources. So that's why I included a chapter about who I am and how I was brought up, to help readers understand where I'm coming from when I say whatever it is I say. Does that make sense?
It does. And again, it helped me kind of understand who you were, even from how you learned to perfect English, because you were teased by the kids in school, correct?
Yes. Well, yes. I was born during World War II, and we lived with my grandparents, who had come from Serbia. So English was hard for them, so they spoke primarily Serbian. So as a little child, and the first of four in my family, I learned Serbian and spoke it most of the time. And it wasn't until I went to school that I had total immersion into English. And my mother, God bless her, the sweetest lady in the world, said, you'll be fine. And I was. By Thanksgiving, I was totally fluent in English. Of course, it helped, as I mentioned in the book, that my parents were bilingual.
And you also kind of mentioned, I mean, your dad is quite a success story in himself. Am I correct? Where someone who was a cab driver who, to be, you know, someone who was overseeing Gillette.
Yes. I mean, it was a great example. And I think it wasn't until in my later life that I realized that the fact that he didn't have a college education, he didn't have any contacts, he was certainly not worldly. He was a typical immigrant son, that he could achieve what he did from when I was a little girl, you know, first running a taxi cab and later running a bowling alley, and then selling razor blades for Gillette Safety Razor in Chicago, and then moving through the ranks up to being the president of Gillette North America. Is an American story. You know, it's only in America those kinds of things happen. And so when I was faced with, as a girl, a female, you know, girls need not apply. You will just get married, have babies. Why do we want to train you? I got that. I understood it because my own father was from that generation. But I also realized that by example, the fact that he didn't give up and he just kept going and tried his best and succeeded, that I could do the same, even though I was a female, and females at that time were not in vogue for the obvious reason. I got it. You're going to get married, you're going to have a baby, and you're going to leave us. Of course, I said, well, gee, this is a new generation. We maybe want to think a little more broadly.
And luckily, a conversation with your godfather, you nearly almost weren't the first one to go to college in your family. Thanks to your godfather, you were able to, correct?
Exactly. He had a daughter, or has a daughter, exactly my age. We were both born in the first 2 weeks of August of the same year. And my godfather asked my dad, "Where's Natalie going to college?" And my father said, "You're kidding. You're sending Diane to college?" It was foreign to him. It wasn't because he was mean, or it just was foreign to him. So my godfather said, "Yes, Willie, you know, girls go to school now. It's a new age." So my father relented and said, "Well, maybe we could apply." Of course, I was very angry with him because, and I talked about it in the book, because it was late. It was my senior year. Who the heck's going to let me apply? But it worked out. And so sometimes, you know, the different paths to get to where you might want to be.
But you ended up going to, you had three schools to choose from, and one of it ended up being University of New Hampshire, and but you didn't go to school for journalism. Is that correct?
No, I didn't. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up. I had no clue. There were not very many opportunities for girls back in the 60s, mid-60s. It was, you could get a good job as a secretary. You could get a good job as a nurse. You could get a good job as a teacher, primarily. Those were the jobs that mostly were available to girls. And, of course, there were certainly exceptions. And while those are wonderful professions, and thank God people want to be in them, they just didn't interest me. So, it's just the way it was.
No, I don't want to jump over you getting married and living in Bangkok, Thailand. That, I thought that was an interesting story, and how you learned to live there and then coming back to the States. I mean, you were employed, but you weren't sure how you were going to be employed. I think the one thing that I that made me chuckle was understanding the coverage of the Vietnam War, and how did they get the pictures and the sound in that little box. That kind of generated your interest in broadcast television, correct?
Well, you know, it sounds bizarre today with all we have in terms of technology, but yes, I think you're referring to a part of the story of my background where I said, when I was trying to figure out what do I want to do with my life, mm-hmm. and I looked at a number of different things, but I was watching the Vietnam War with Walter Cronkite, and I thought, wow, what are they doing? How do they get all those pictures and sound and stories inside that little box? And it sounds silly to say it that way, but so I applied to various television stations when we got back from Bangkok, and which was, by the way, better than getting a master's in anything. It was extraordinary to be introduced to a whole new culture during a difficult time. And I did apply, and I could not get a job. Nobody wanted to hire a girl. So one person, Jim Thistle, who later became the best news director I think we ever had at Channel 5, due respects to all the other wonderful people who are great news directors at Channel 5, he was the news director at this little UHF station in Boston, and said, "I read your portfolio. I can see that you can write, you can think. I think you'd be a good reporter someday. And if you can wait a year, I will hire you. But right now, I don't have money in my budget for a cub reporter." And I said, "Okay, I'll wait." I was waitressing. I was working at various... let me just get rid of this noise that's coming in here. Sorry. And anyway, a year later, he did call. And he said, "You know that job I told you about?" And I said, "Yes." "Well, I don't have that job, but I have something else." I said, "Fine, I'll take it, whatever it is." I just thought, I don't know anything about television. I have no idea. What do they do there? How does it work? And I figured if I got in, I would find out. And I was young enough, 20-something. If I find out if this was for me or not. If it wasn't for me, I'd try something else.
And I think the thing that was interesting is not only did you write, you were able to write something up and do a presentation that was went over quite well. I mean, at first, my understanding, the way I understood it, was that you weren't sure as to how well it would be received. And you were hoping, I think, to glean a job out of it. But eventually, that's not what happened. I believe it wasn't until there was a little bit of a takeover, WHDH, which eventually became WCVB, where, you know, you actually started creating programming, right?
Well, it was an unusual journey to get to the job I eventually had that you're referring to, yes. Mm. So while I was at the Channel 56, the UHF station that I just mentioned, I was asked to do what the FCC required all stations to do at that time, which was to ascertain the needs of the community. What that meant was you had to go and interview everyone from the governor and the mayor to just regular people who were working in any number of fields to basically be able to write a report to the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, saying we have ascertained the needs of our people. What a gift, as I look back on it, for a woman who wanted to be a reporter. You had a sense of who you were talking to, who you were talking about. So I did that for Channel 56, and then Channel 4 hired me only because I had that experience, and their license was up for renewal. Back then, you had to renew your license every 3 years, and you had to prove some things. You had to prove that you were fair on issues. You had to prove that you gave equal time to candidates. So that was how I got in. And then at WBZ, which was the powerhouse at the time in Boston, I had an opportunity then to put my information to use. We're so used to today, public service announcements and such things, but they weren't so common then. And I was able to do that and work with some experienced producers and produce shows that mattered to people who were watching us. It was an extraordinary experience. And then finally, it would take way too long to go into detail.
Sure.
So I hope people read the book.
You read the book.
Yeah. And then finally, I got to, as you mentioned, to WCVB, which after a protracted fight, won the license to operate Channel 5. It's an unusual journey. I feel lucky to have managed to go through that. And I think if there's one thing about the book that I hope people appreciate is that I do feel lucky and that I do feel there's more than one path to get wherever you might want to go, even if you don't know where it is you want to go. But if you keep your eyes and ears open and you're receptive to other people's thoughts, ideas, and what's going on in your world, life can be very rich.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Natalie Jacobson, Every Life a Story. We're talking about her memoirs and the book that she has written. And again, if you're somebody who likes reading, this is a great read. If you're somebody who likes listening to audiobooks, it's the voice of Natalie. And it's like it transports you back to the days of when she was on the air and some of the things that she endured. Can we talk about the first time that you and Chet actually anchored together? I believe it was a marathon, and not an actual marathon, but I believe there was a special guest. There was a special ceremony going on, our bicentennial.
Right. Well, it's a great story. Just very briefly, in 1976, the United States celebrated our 200th anniversary, and the Queen of England was coming to Boston. And remember, we're Boston people. Coming to Boston to celebrate America's independence from Britain. What an irony. And our news director, Jim Thistle, said, we're covering this from the moment she steps off the Britannia to the moment she goes to bed back on her ship. So we were on the air for over 8 hours of live coverage. We fielded. I realize that young people listening to this might say, big deal. But we fielded 11 live cameras, which were connected by microwaves, not satellites, not digital. This is 1976. And what it became was a history lesson about the United States independence from Britain. And people all across New England were engrossed that they were watching this, an extraordinary irony, if you will, and came, actually left their TV sets in Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, and came to Boston because, as they wrote to me later, we had to taste it and feel it and see it for ourselves. It was extraordinary. And Chet and I were paired for the first time for that broadcast. And our boss, Bob Bennett, the wonderful general manager who's responsible for the success, the early success of WCVB, and the continued success, I would add, thought we were a good match. And that's how that started.
And you yourself, a trailblazer, first woman to anchor in the Boston market. Is that accurate to say?
Yes. To anchor these 6 and 11 o'clock news.
Correct.
Yes. And, you know, I don't think I thought too much about it at the time. And it seems late in the game, but not really. TV was new, you know. So, I don't know. Just got lucky again, I guess.
Your book talks about so many different interviews, so many different conversations, whether it's with Dr. John Silber and the incident regarding a phone call from Dr. Henry Kissinger, and learning information later on to running for, you know, being sought after to run for Congress, which you declined. But talk to me about some of the great interviews that you've been able to do over your career, over the years, 40 years, and what's the most memorable ones that still stay with you to this day?
That's impossible to answer, and so many people do ask me, and I don't mean to be disrespectful.
No.
But the interview, the most important interview was the one I was doing at the time. And, you know, as you look back through these interviews, and it was not an intent on my part when I wrote this book, but I see it as I read what I wrote, that life is a continuum, and the issues that existed in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s and early 2000s, many of them still exist. And I think that's a very important, it's important to me to recognize that. For example, racism, abortion, education, immigration, you name it. These things don't go away. They're a continuing part of life in this extraordinarily wonderful country. And I hope that if you read the way we covered it in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, that it's not ancient history, that you see the same issues that we face today, how we covered them then, as opposed to how they are being covered today. It was without rancor. It was without bias. It was without anger at anyone who had an opinion different from ours. And we kept our opinions separate on a different page in a newspaper in a different place called an editorial in a local newscast. And I hope, and perhaps this is too much but to hope for, but that's me. I'm the eternal optimist. I hope that in reading this, you see that there are better ways to cover news. There are better ways to get along. There are better ways to compromise. And I think the book proves it. Not just my book, but I hope you read other history. Mine's not a history book. I hope you read history and see there are better ways than the way we're doing it today.
Well, I think, again, and I was going to bring up Julia Child and you know, doing an interview with her prior to them taking all of her stuff to the Smithsonian, you know, before she left Cambridge. I thought that was a great story. Probably one that I would ask you to kind of talk about is learning to fly. Knowing that all the guys were flying, you learned how to fly, and it was like the first time you flew by yourself and had to land at a field. Could you share that?
Sure. I guess I don't mind telling embarrassing stories about myself. I was at a dinner which involved a whole bunch of people associated with Channel 5, and everybody flew. And I was the only woman at the table, and I thought, oh, my God, this is going to be dreadful. I don't know anything about flying. What? And they talked about it all night. So the next morning, I got up and went to Norwood Airport and said, I'd like to take a demo ride. I'd like to know why everybody's so excited about this thing called flying. So I took a demo ride, and that did it. I was hooked, and I signed up for lessons, and I learned how to fly a single-engine plane. And I have to say it was exhilarating. It was a challenge, and I loved every bit of it. And then the first time I was all by myself without an instructor sitting in the seat next to me to save me from whatever wrong I might do, it was beautiful. It was a sunny day, and I was excited, and my job was to fly. This is part of getting your license, was to fly to a particular point and to get your land and get your logbook signed and come back. It was my first cross country, as it was called. And I landed at the wrong field. I landed at a military base which is right next to a civilian base. And as I was coming in for a landing, I went on UNICOM, which is what you do at a field that doesn't have a tower. And I announced my arrival, and all of a sudden I looked up and saw there was a tower. So I knew I was in the wrong place. I wanted to die. Oh, my God. So I landed, and, of course, the military guys are charging my airplane, waving frantically at me. I just played dumb and waved at them, gave them a big smile, went back to UNICOM as though I didn't realize I had come to the wrong field, and took off. Went to the right field. Had my book signed, went back to Norwood, and my instructor said, so how'd it go? I said, oh, great, no problem. He said, maybe not. So I'm lucky I didn't land in jail, I guess. Or in a brig.
Yeah, you can't have that happen. And again,
you mentioned Julia Child. That's illustrative of the many gifts of being a local reporter. Right. You get to meet everybody. And extraordinary people. And in a city like Boston, which is just filled with so much in the way of extraordinary people, I called Julia and said, I just read that the Smithsonian Institute is coming to your house in Cambridge, and they're going to take away your kitchen. And I also understand that you're moving. You need to talk to me today before all this happens. Your fans will demand it. And fortunately for me, she agreed to do it. But that's, you know, how great is that? How lovely, how wonderful, how lucky to have an opportunity to just make the phone call and do something that much fun and that brought people a lot of warmth, I think, in listening to her.
Well, and I would say this is, I wish we had more time because I want to talk to you about the cooking videos you did with Jasper. I mean, there's so much in this book that folks should get a copy of this book to read, you know, cover to cover. Probably the last question I would ask you, other than where folks can get copies of it, and that this is in regards to reporting. What do you feel is the role of a local TV reporter or anchor? And second part of that, do you miss being on air?
Well, the first part, the role is to tell people what's going on. Your job is to inform people so they can make smart decisions. Your job is to acquaint them with other people in their community. It's your job is to relate national and global events to your local scene. So you bring, in essence, your job is to bring a community of people in your area together. In terms of do I miss it? I miss the camaraderie with my colleagues, and I miss the opportunity to cover news, yes. But it's changed so much that I wouldn't be able to do today what we did then. It's just a different world.
If folks want to get a copy of your book or they want to hear your book, the audio version, how can they find out more about your book, Every Life a Story?
Thank you for asking. I had to self-publish because I found out that publishers don't do local memoirs. So, at any rate, I think the easiest way is to go to Amazon and you can get any of the three things, either the hardcover book, or the ebook, or the audio book, which I recorded as you noted.
I want to thank you so much. It was an honor and a privilege to be able to speak with you, an award-winning journalist, somebody who played an important role to not only my life, but many folks who remember, you know, from the early 70s to the early 2000s of you being on air in your interviews and how you informed us and kept us up to date as things that are happening in and around our area and around the world.
Well, thank you, and thank you very much for having done your homework and reading the book and listening to it. I really appreciate that. Not everybody does that. So you're a good man, Charlie Brown. You're good at what you do, too.
There she is, Natalie Jacobson, our guest. We're going to step aside. One more guest, one more author on deck. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year,